This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, a program sponsored in part by the Lions Clubs of Boylston and Bolton, and thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from Berlin, Bolton, Boylston, Clinton, Lancaster, Sterling, and West Boylston. Today, we will be reading from the July 31st edition of The Item. This is Ellen. Many openings, many applicants in Lancaster by Ken Cleveland. The town has numerous applicants seeking to work for Lancaster, Town Administrator John Woodsmall said on July 20th as he updated the select board on progress filling open positions. Members were concerned about the openings and reasons employees are leaving. "It's disappointing some of these positions are open," Woodsmall said. "They are leaving town, driving longer distances for the same job and getting paid more money." Member David Carr noted a positive of the situation as Woodsmall detailed the number of applicants submitted. "I think it's exciting that this many people want to come work for Lancaster," Carr said. Chair Jason Allison said, "At some point, the town has to decide if it wants to invest in encouraging longevity of employees, rather than being a feeder town, training people who then move on to other communities for higher pay." "It's a mix of things," Woodsmall said, "of the reasons people leave, but pay is one that can prompt an employee to explore opportunities." Open positions include the finance director, which had attracted about a dozen applicants. A screening committee chose three to interview, two of whom accepted interviews, Woodsmall said. "Those two names will be disclosed following checking references," he said, "and brought forward to the board for interviews, likely at the August 3rd board meeting. But the appointment is more complicated." Woodsmall said the town currently has two union employees doing duties beyond the scope of their work. They need to be appointed as acting or assigned additional duties. "I'm not technically able to make those changes," Woodsmall said. Under the town's structure for the finance director under the Acts of 2002, according to Woodsmall, town council said the board could temporarily assign duties of the finance director to the town administrator until a finance director is hired, with no additional compensation. Woodsmall could then appoint employees to acting roles. "It also removes any appearance of conflict of interest," Woodsmall said. The board unanimously voted for the interim solution, with Allison commenting it was why we need to get rid of the special acts of 2002. Woodsmall said there are numerous other positions open. With the recent resignations of the assistant town clerk and the conservation agent, there's a lot going on in town with open positions, Woodsmall said. Other positions include a heavy equipment operator, payroll specialist, council on aging administrative assistant, firefighter positions, and a fire department administrator. On the plus side, there are over 30 applications for the COA position and close to 70 for the 8 firefighter spots, with interviews offered to 13 applicants. Evaluation. The board voted a change in the process for evaluating the town administrator. Member Ralph Gifford, who was slated to compile the evaluations that would be completed by the three members, suggested having the town council compile the individual evaluations. "It would cost too much money to pay council for something we could do," Allison said. "I would take the work on myself if you don't." "I would prefer to hand it back," Gifford said, noting his time constraints. "I will find the time to do it," Allison said. The board voted to use the process it had in the past, with the evaluations compiled by the board chair. The compiled evaluation would then be released to the public. Dog hearing. A dog hearing the board recently held is not yet over. The dog owner appealed the board's decision, which imposed conditions for the dog, with the Clinton District Court clerk magistrate finding the process was done properly and denying the appeal. As a result, the owner of the dog has requested a new hearing in front of a single judge, Woodsmall said, with all evidence reheard and the process redone before a judge. He said those involved were notified that they would be testifying tentatively on August 16th. Wood Small noted that everything is now open for re-examination and findings. He added that the board's decision not to consider euthanizing could be back on the table if the judge finds the dog is dangerous. The board also approved licenses for alcohol sales and entertainment for the upcoming Bolton Fair to be held at the Lancaster Fairgrounds from August 14th to the 16th. Letter. The Select Board, July 25th, approved letters to the town's state legislators to request that you take no action on any legislation that may minimize the impact of the November 2024 state election ballot question 1, state auditor's authority to audit the legislature. The board noted that included opposition to the House bill that was approved, narrowing the scope of the audit authority, approved by 68% of Lancaster voters, urging they reject any attempts to subvert the desired outcome of Lancaster voters. Sterling native Ready to Make Her Music Dreams Come True by Danielle Ray, Sterling. Lifelong town resident Allie Bauman is about to embark on the adventure of a lifetime and will be bringing her musical talents with her. The 23-year-old songwriter and artist has been preparing for living out of her van full-time beginning this month and is taking a trip in it along with her cat Boo. Stops include Michigan, Colorado, Utah, Montana, Wyoming, and visiting her sister in Georgia, ultimately landing on the West Coast. I'll be traveling across the country, working on music and playing gigs as I make my way to Cali, and I will be sharing lots of music along the way, Bauman said recently. She graduated from Wachusett Regional High School and then Berklee College of Music in Boston, where she majored in songwriting with a minor in music production and engineering. Bauman has been sharing her original music and released her first single, Rain Dancer, in January of this year, a song she wrote in 2023 in her backyard in Sterling. It was inspired by a rainy day at the lake, and I took the watery imagery to write about how relationships can get messy, said Bauman, who was involved in the Sterling Recreation Department's Summer Lake Program for many years. This song features a person so caught up in someone else that because of their love for this person, they can't always see through the storm. She's my lifeboat and my tombstone is one of the lyrics in the song that she says highlights a relationship where the good and bad are equal, so it feels contradictory and confusing. Sometimes people hold you down as they lift you up, or it can feel that way, Bauman said. The main character is dancing through the storm of this other person, and while they're fairly happy to be there, they know that this relationship is not what's best for either person. She noted that writing the song was a long time coming, and I had the most fun with the entire process. Bauman even made a DIY music video for Rain Dancer with her friends, which can be found on her YouTube channel, along with other materials of hers. Bauman is in the process of releasing her next single, I Wish It Was, and is writing and recording music as much as possible, along with editing and making plans for an EP that she's hoping to release this fall. I'm working on lots of songs that I will pitch to other artists, as well as writing songs with friends and collaborators, she relayed. One of my big dreams and goals is to be a songwriter for other artists, so I'm always growing with my portfolio. Bauman has been playing guitar for about 10 years and piano for even longer. I started playing on this little crappy keyboard I found in the basement, and it changed my life, she said. I'd spend hours learning chords and writing out notes to songs I wanted to learn. I created my own system where I'd write in my journals, left hand D, F sharp, G, right hand, G, D, F sharp, etc., and I'd learn song after song. It all came very naturally to me. I could hear a song and play it by ear just by finding the notes on the keys or the strings. She also plays a bit of ukulele and bass guitar, dabbles on the drums, and has been singing her whole life. My mom is a singer, so I grew up singing with her in church, choir, and in the car, Bauman added. She was my biggest inspiration to learn how to sing as a kid. I wanted to sing just like her, but she helped me find my own voice. She calls her parents' house home base, and they are very supportive of her artistic endeavors. Her dad helped turn her van into a studio and living space on wheels, so she can write and produce songs out of it. The two of them recently got back from a trial trip. I have such a great support system in my family and friends, And everyone's been so encouraging. I truly feel so blessed, Bauman said. Just having a song finished and released feels immensely satisfying, and at the same time, it lit a fire in me for more. So I'm hot on the grind with more music coming out and more content. Although she has released some of her original songs, Bauman said there are hundreds of songs I've written that will forever stay just between me and my notebook. My brain seems to be a lockbox for lyrics and melodies, she said. And I was drawn to writing songs the way some people journal. It was, it's my outlet to process the world as I take it in and experience it fully. With a pen in hand, I feel no fear to hold back, and some songs belong to the page. Bauman said she finds it very exciting to put her music out into the world. Releasing music is a little bit like letting someone read a page of your journal, she said. Luckily, I'm an open book, so that's fun, but I absolutely love sharing what I do with others. My true favorite thing about music, as a creator and a consumer, is the way it breeds connection. Music is the universal language. There's no better feeling than vibing with other people over good music. My goal is to have a song for every moment and every emotion that people need at that time. A little something for everyone, Bauman added. In doing that, I know not all my music will be for everyone, but my hope is that you'll find a little something for you in the music that I make. Clay by Kay creates colorful accessories. By Jan Gottsman, Sterling. Everyone needs an outlet for creativity and expression. For Kayla Girardi of Sterling, that outlet was making jewelry from polymer clay. Now the full-time nurse has started selling her jewelry under the name Clay by Kay. Girardi moved to Sterling a couple of years ago after growing up in Hubbardston. I've always loved art and crafting. Throughout high school and college, I took as many art classes as I could, including a ceramics class that I absolutely loved, she said. Looking back, it makes sense that I eventually found my way back to working with clay. She started making polymer clay jewelry in May. I work full-time as a nurse, so creating jewelry has become a fun creative outlet on my days off. It all started as a simple date idea with my boyfriend, Andrew, Girardi said. We bought some polymer clay just to make a few cute projects together, and while exploring different ideas, I discovered the world of polymer clay jewelry. I immediately fell in love with the process. Right now, Clay by Kay is focused on bright-colored earrings, but Girardi hopes to expand into other products. I've always been someone who loves bold, fun earrings, so I thought, why not create my own and share them with others? I was pleasantly surprised by the support I received from friends, family, and my community, she said. That encouragement inspired me to turn my hobby into a small business. She said she is excited to start experimenting with necklaces and bracelets as well. My designs are inspired by the things I love most, florals, bright colors, sparkles, animal prints, and coastal themes, she added. While I've learned many techniques from other clay artists, I've also developed my own style along the way, and I'm continuing to grow with every collection I create. She said one of her favorite things about making jewelry is that there is something for everyone. It's hard to name a most popular design because every customer is drawn to something different. I love offering a variety of styles so people can find pieces that match their own personality, she said. Polymer clay jewelry is lightweight and surprisingly durable once it's baked and finished, Girardi said, but it does benefit from a little extra care. I recommend keeping pieces out of direct sunlight for extended periods and avoiding wearing them in water so they stay beautiful for years to come. Girardi said she would love to expand beyond selling jewelry to offer local clay workshops and classes. I think it'd be so much fun to share this creative hobby with others and create a space where people can relax and learn something new and make something they're proud of, she said. You can check out Clay by Kay on Facebook and Instagram at clay_by_Kayla or email her at girardikayla@yahoo.com. Cornhole Tournament for Foundation is August 29th, Boylston. The 6th annual Matthew John Phillips Cornhole Tournament is Saturday, August 29th, with a rain date of August 30th at Pop Warner Football Field, Route 70 and 140. Reserve your spot to benefit the Matthew John Phillips Scholarship Foundation. On the day of the tournament, registration opens at 11 a.m. Raffles are announced at 12:15 p.m. and bags fly at 12:30 p.m. Cost to register a team is $50. There's a food truck on site. The tournament is double elimination. Registration is due by August 22nd, but spots fill early. For registration, visit their website. Also, create a player profile by downloading the free Scoreholio app. Every player needs a profile for tournament day. Team registration fee can be paid via Venmo at Matthew John Phillips, PayPal, or at mjpf.org. Peace pole installation is August 9th in Sterling. The Wachusett Area Rotary Club and the Common Good Alliance of Central Massachusetts, CGA, announced the installation of a peace pole on the Sterling Town Common and invite members of the community to attend a public dedication ceremony on Sunday, August 9th at 11:30 a.m. The peace pole is a gift to the community and a symbol of the shared hope for peace among all people. The dedication ceremony will bring together residents, local leaders, and Rotary members to celebrate peace, understanding, and community connection. Inscribed with the message, "May peace prevail on earth," in multiple languages, the Sterling Peace Pole reflects Rotary's commitment to fostering international understanding, service above self, and stronger communities. The installation is part of the Peace Pole Project of May Peace Prevail on Earth International, a global movement that encourages communities to come together in the spirit of peace. With more than 200,000 peace poles planted around the world, the project's monuments serve as enduring symbols of hope, unity, and humanity's shared desire for a more peaceful future. "We are honored to bring this symbol of peace to Sterling," said Richard Traina, organizer of the project from the Wachusett Area Rotary Club, "at a time when kindness, respect, and unity are more important than ever. We hope this peace pole will serve as a gathering place for reflection and a reminder of our shared responsibility to build a more peaceful world." The dedication will take place on the anniversary of the bombing of Nagasaki, Japan. The date was chosen to underscore the peace pole's message of hope and remember the devastating consequences of war, reaffirming a shared commitment to peace. "It is especially meaningful to dedicate this peace pole on the sad anniversary of the Nagasaki nuclear detonation 81 years ago on this date," said Paul Leftwich, core team leader of CGA. "We're grateful to the Sterling Cultural Council for its Sea Grant, which helped make this project possible, and hope visitors to this tranquil spot in the middle of town will be reminded of the need to work together with a shared sense of purpose to achieve lasting peace for ourselves and future generations." The dedication ceremony will include remarks from both Rotary and Common Good Alliance representatives, local officials, and community leaders. Residents of all ages are encouraged to attend and participate in this special event celebrating peace, friendship, and community spirit. The event is free and open to the public. Sterling Memorial moved to Memorial Park. It was moving day Monday, July 27th. For the Sterling Firefighters Memorial. The large stone memorial was donated by Frank Lanciani in 1977. He was a longtime firefighter and wanted it used as a permanent memorial for all Sterling firefighters who passed away. The monument, a stone ring with a hole in the middle, came from a blacksmith shop outside the town center, where it was used as a tool to help forge the iron bands that went around wooden wagon wheels, according to the Sterling Fire Department. On May 29, 1977, the monument was dedicated on the town common, where it has been since. On July 27, the Sterling DPW assisted in digging the monument out of the ground and, using heavy equipment, moved it from the common to Memorial Park, behind the fire station, among the other monuments in the park. Tucino is picked for Berlin Administrator by Jan Gottsman, Berlin. "The town may have a town administrator, but everyone has thought that previously. The select board met Tuesday on July 28th first in executive session to discuss a contract, and then in open session to unanimously vote on a town administrator employment contract after interviewing two finalists earlier in the month. The final vote is pending a full background check, but their choice, Michael Tosino III, is tentatively scheduled to begin the week of August 24th. On July 16th, the board voted to support Tosino as the town's new administrator. The July 16th vote was not unanimous, with Peg Stone voting against, preferring the other finalist, Logan Breeze, for bringing specific suggestions. She said while she would work with Tosino, she would not vote for him. Both Chair Lisa Wozocki and member Carolyn McDonald favored Tosino for his experience. Tosino is chief operating officer in the office of the Framingham mayor. He said this was his first job interview in 19 years, while moving to Berlin would mean a pay cut, and a move to a smaller community. For me, it's more about quality of life, being happy in life, and better job satisfaction. He said he does not like switching jobs, and if he does move out of Framingham, it will likely be his last job before retirement. My true passion is overseeing a town like Berlin, Tosino said. Jeff Nutting has served as interim town administrator since March, when the former Berlin town administrator, Kristen Rubin, left to take a similar job in Upton. On July 13th, the select board voted to extend Nutting's contract, allowing the town to re-interview some candidates after the board's choice, Alex McGee, decided to take another job the previous week. Nutting will serve as interim until a new person comes in, working approximately 2 days a week, but with hours as needed to support operations. Dee Green will be supporting day-to-day operations as the assistant town administrator, with Eric Strait as the executive assistant. Bulldogs Power Through for Winning Travel Season by Bill Marsh, Clinton. It was a memorable summer of softball for the Clinton 14-under Bulldogs travel team, which finished the season with an impressive 19-8-2 record. In the final two tournaments of the season, the Bulldogs advanced to the championship game, finishing second in both of them. Clinton competed against the best 14U teams in New England and more than held its own. The team played tournaments in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. We had a great year, and it's been a ton of fun, Clinton coach David Kaiser said. In our last four tournaments, we played well and really caught fire. We were trailing in most of the games in the recent tournaments, but found a way to come back, he said. We were like the cardiac kids and just found a way to win. Every game, a different player stepped up to help us win, Kaiser said. It didn't matter where in the batting order it came from, but we got the hits when we needed them. Everyone has done a great job, he added. The Bulldogs had a 1-2 punch mound core in Ellie Frisch, who was second on the team in batting with a 3.96 average, and Eva Lavangeli. Ellie and Eva did a great job for us, Kaiser said. They were both winning pitchers, and our record proves that. They both threw strikes and had been fun to watch. They both can hit, too, and Eva had a couple of inside-the-park home runs in recent games, he said. Callie Ladner was the catcher. Callie did a great job behind the plate, and she's very tough to run on, Kaiser said. She had a cannon for an arm and is a wall back there, and did a great job keeping the pitcher on track. The Bulldogs' infield was solid all season. At first base was Hayden Kaiser, who had a .453 on-base percentage, and Amelia Coyne, who also played some outfield. Hayden had a good year at the plate and has been a consistent hitter, David Kaiser said. Amelia does a lot of the little things, the intangibles, and is a great teammate. At second base were Macy Santiguitz, Nellie Schoolcraft, and Laganelli when she wasn't pitching. All three saw time at second, Dave Kaiser said. They had really stepped up and played well at that position. The shortstop was Sophia Alvarado, while Aubrey Proctor played third. Sophie had great range at short and was a terror on the base paths, David Kaiser said. She is fast and is always looking to steal a base. Aubrey was the vocal person on the team and called out what we wanted to do in the infield in any given situation, he said. She was quick to get to a bunt and got some key hits for us, too. The Bulldogs' outfield had plenty of speed. In left field was Sienna Valley, who was third on the team in batting with a .386 average, and Frisch when she wasn't pitching. Sienna had an awesome year, David Kaiser said. Her batting average is right up there, and she gave us some timely and key hitting. She had a great year at the plate, in the field, on the bases, where she's a real speed demon, he said. Ellie Frisch has done a great job pitching, fielding, and hitting. She killed it at the plate and was our leadoff hitter, who got on base. In center field was Jenna Bork, who led the team in batting with a .456 average, while Emma Schoolcraft was in right. Jenna Bork had a strong arm in center field and saved some games with her glove, Dave Kaiser said. She hit the ball well and had a high batting average and led the team in RBIs. Emma Schoolcraft covers a lot of ground in right and found a home there, he said. Cell phone limits coming to Clinton schools by Jan Godsman. Students at Clinton High School will see a major change for the school year beginning at the end of August. This school year, the school's implementing a bell-to-bell cell phone ban across the district. This represents a significant change for Clinton High School, Principal Scott Zermack said in a letter to parents on July 21st. In the past, the ban was only at the elementary school and middle schools. The goal is to have the school committee finalize all policy and procedure changes at the August 10th meeting, Superintendent Stephen Meyer said. This past May, the United States Surgeon General's Office released an advisory on the harms of excessive screen use in children, recommending that schools limit students' screen time to improve their focus, learning, and physical and mental health, the letter to students and parents stated. One of the primary recommendations for schools was a bell-to-bell cell phone ban that would prevent phone use during the entire school day. This includes passing periods and lunch. In addition, the Mass Senate and House of Representatives have both passed legislation to promote student learning and mental health that calls for a bell-to-bell ban in all schools. While these bills are currently being reconciled in a conference committee, the pertinent language of both bills is the same, Zermack wrote. The Clinton Public Schools Administration began looking at its own bring-your-own-devices and cell phone data and policies during the spring, as well as various means to restrict cell phone usage. This summer, the Clinton Public Schools administrative team read a book called The Digital Delusion. This book highlights some of the negative effects of educational technology and calls on schools to be much more intentional about their use of technology in the classroom, the letter stated. Students in Clinton Elementary School and Clinton Middle School are expected to keep their cell phones at home, in their backpack, or in a secure locker during the day, according to the letter about the policies. At Clinton High School, students are strongly encouraged to leave personal electronic devices at home or locked in their vehicle if possible. If this is not possible, students may elect one of the following options, according to the letter. Cell phone lockers. Students may bring their cell phones to the office in the morning and hand in their phone. Their phone will then be secured in a locked cell phone locker and available for pickup once the school day has ended. Software-based management. Students who would like to keep their cell phones on them may do so, provided that they have downloaded the Dorman app and that they scan in at the start of the day. When students enter their home room in the morning, they'll check in with a QR code. Once they do this, the apps lock their phone until 2:09 p.m. The only way to regain access before then is through an emergency unlock, which notifies the office that the phone has been unlocked. We're also working to tie this into our attendance system, according to the letter. Meyer and Fitchburg will be using Dorman this year. Additionally, CHS students will be under a no BYOD policy at Clinton High School. All students will still have their Chromebooks, and as a district, we will be focused on intentional use of technology in the classroom, meaning technology is to be used purposefully and only when a teacher intends for it to be used, according to the letter. The topic of technology was addressed initially at the July 13th school committee meeting, see the story in the July 14th item, and will be discussed again at the Clinton school committee meetings in the high school library on Monday, August 10th at 7 p.m. Summer concert season continues in Item Towns, Berlin. 19 Carter Community Center has summer concerts set for Saturdays through August 15th, at the facility. Tickets are available now at 19carter.org, 175 for summer pass. Individual tickets are $25 in advance or $30 at the door, $5 for students and free for children. 19 Carter will partner with local breweries and wineries at select concerts. August 8th, Rio Flow Trio, and August 15th, Lori Diamond and Fred Apatelli with Analessi. For information, visit 19carter.org or email info@19carter.org. Bolton. Parks and Recreation are hosting 4 concerts at the Town Commons from 6 to 8 p.m. on the following dates. August 24th, California Dreamers. September 18th, Pub Kings. And October 17th, Disco Lemonade. Weather cancellation notices will be announced on the Bolton Parks and Recreation social media. For information, visit boltonma.myrec.com. Clinton. Concerts are held every Tuesday in Central Park with rain date of Wednesday. Vendors expected include The Taco Dude, Sterling Street Brewery, The Fountain, Wheat and Water, and Fran Flynn. The host is Clinton Parks and Recreation. August 11th. Crossroad Bands. August 4th, Brookfield Rhythm. August 18th, 01510 Band. August 25th, the Rusty Buckets Band. And September 1st, Mike Mazzola, rescheduled to this date due to rain. Sterling. Sterling Recreation hosts concerts every Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. through August in Memorial Park behind the fire station. August 5th, Rampage Trio. August 12th, Rhythm. August 19th, P.T. Pickers. August 26th, Rose Gold Glasses. West Boylston. All concerts are Sundays, except August 15th, which is a Saturday. August concerts are 5 to 7 p.m. and are held on the Bandstand Common. August 2nd, Rhythm. August 9th, Cheek to Cheek. Saturday, August 15th, Southern Drive featuring Michael David. And August 23rd, Illusions. If you have a summer concert series in the item and you don't see it listed, email information to news@clintonitem.com. Letter to the editor says thanks for cruising success. Kicker is letter to the editor. Just a note of thanks to the many people who made Cruisin' Clinton 4 a tremendous success. We wish to thank the Clinton Cultural Council, which has funded our event for the past 4 years. We could not do this without its help, and we very much appreciate the support shown. My co-chair, Kevin LeCompte, and his hard-working staff for the tremendous turnout of classic cars, over 200 this year. It could not have gone any better. A special thank you to Aaron Gonzalez, formerly of Haskell Avenue in Clinton, who designed our new T-shirts. As always, Ron Boston did another great job for us. Town officials and departments, select board, town administrator, parks and rec, the DPW, the facilities department, board of health, top to bottom, they make this event easy for us to plan and implement. It would be so easy to put up roadblocks and red tape to make this event difficult to plan. Our local government makes it easy for us and supports us in our efforts. We thank Pleasant View and Dustin Whitaker for the donation of the extra porta potties around the park that night. Those Historical Society board members, friend, and my own family who worked hard all night long to man raffle and T-shirt sales, the photo booths, and of course, Deb McMahon Cody for handling our scratch ticket raffle, which brought in $800 and was won by Jim Barrett. Our vendors, Sirloin Catering, Flippin' the Bird Barbecue, Bird's Nest Braised Food, The Fountain, Bob's Dogs, Domino's Pizza, Coco's Tropical Ice, Coffee Cabin, Sterling Street Brewery, and Real Youth Connections were easy to work with and helped promote our event on their Facebook page and websites. Thank you for your hard work and cooperation. We hope you had a great night, too. Special thanks to Cindy Cannon of Sunrise Boutique, who sold $700 worth of T-shirts for us. She's still selling them if you didn't get yours. For the town of Clinton and all who turned out, this event seems to get better every year. We appreciate the support. Terry Ingano, Program Chair, Clinton Historical Society. Corrected. Fall election ballot taking shape. Editor's note. Ming Zhang is challenging Senator John Cronin on the November ballot, looking to represent the Worcester and Middlesex Senate District. Now that town elections are mostly done, voters look forward to the fall elections for state and federal offices. The primary is set for September 1st, while the main election is November 3rd. The state mandate polls be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. The only municipal election planned for this fall is the Berlin-Boylston Regional School Committee, with the November election specified in the regional agreement. Many offices are not contested, either in the primary or the November election. Senate and House. There are no state Senate primaries in the item area. Neither 1st Worcester District State Senator Robin Kennedy of Worcester nor Worcester Middlesex District State Senator John Cronin of Fitchburg have opponents in the primary. Cronin has a challenger, Ming Zhang, on the November election. Kennedy represents Berlin, Bolton, Boylston, and West Boylston in the item area. Cronin represents Clinton and Lancaster in the item area. Incumbent Worcester and Hampshire District State Senator Peter Durant of Spencer has no primary challenger on the Republican side. Democrat Shannon Thiebaud of West Brookfield will face Durant in the November election. The Worcester and Hampshire districts include Sterling. In the House of Representatives, incumbent James O'Day of West Boylston is facing a primary challenge from Barur Raj Rajankumar of West Boylston. There's no Republican challenger. West Boylston is the only item area town in the district. 12th Worcester District Rep. Megan Kilcoyne of Clinton has no challenger in the primary and faces Republican Lisa Mayer of Berlin in the November election. The district represents Berlin, Boylston, Clinton, Lancaster, and Sterling in the item area. 3rd Middlesex District Rep. Kate Hogan of Stowe, who represents Bolton, has no challenger in either the primary or the November election. U.S. House and Senate. For U.S. Representatives, 2nd District Rep. James McGovern of Worcester is running unopposed in both the primary and November elections, while 3rd District Rep. Lori Trahan of Westford is unopposed in the Democratic primary and will face Republican Gary Grossi of Acton in the November 3rd election. Kevin Aides, unenrolled, is also running, according to Ballotpedia. Trahan currently represents Berlin, Bolton, Clinton, and Lancaster in the item area, while McGovern represents Boylston, Sterling, and West Boylston. For U.S. Senate, Ed Markey of Malden is facing a Democratic challenge from Seth Moulton of Salem, while Republican John Deaton of Bolton will face the winner on November 3rd. There are some other party candidates on the ballot. Philip Devincentis, American Independent Party, Joseph Tachi, Party for Socialism and Liberation, Sheba Adurie, Independent, and Morgan DeWicke, Independent. Berlin-Boylston School Committee. Nomination papers to run for the Berlin-Boylston Regional School Committee are now available. Elections for this board occur during the November elections. There will be one candidate elected to a 4-year term from Berlin and two for 4-year terms from Boylston. Nomination papers are available for pickup at the school district central office on Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., or pick them up from your town's clerk. To run for a seat, you must be a resident of either Berlin or Boylston and registered to vote in the community in which you live. You must collect 50 signatures. They can be a combination from Berlin and Boylston as long as they total at least 50. You must have separate nomination papers for Berlin signatures and Boylston signatures. Nomination papers must be submitted no later than Tuesday, July 21st at 5 p.m., so that date is passed. After nomination papers are certified by the town clerks no later than August 11th, you must pick them up from the clerk and bring them to the district clerk Jennifer Fortune at the Berlin-Boylston Regional School District Central Office, 215 Main Street, Boylston, no later than Tuesday, August 18th at 4 p.m. Statewide office. Governor Maura Healey of Arlington is unopposed in the Democratic primary, while Republicans Michael Minogue of Hamilton and Brian Shortsleeve of Barnstable will face off in the September 1st primary for a chance to challenge her in the general election. Lieutenant Governor Kimberly Driscoll of Salem is unopposed in the Democratic primary. Republican Sean Oliver of New Bedford will run unopposed in the primary for a chance to challenge Jeff Driscoll in November. Republican Ann Martin was disqualified from the ballot in a state ballot law commissioning ruling on June 26th, though Ballotpedia lists Martin as a write-in. Attorney General Andrea Campbell of Dartmouth, a Democrat, has no challenger in the primary. Republican Michael Walsh of Linfield was also disqualified from the ballot in a ruling June 26th and will not appear on the November 3rd ballot. And Treasurer Deborah Goldberg of Brookline has no Democratic challenger in the primary, but will face Elizabeth Dione of Belmont, a Republican, in the November election. Secretary of State William Galvin of Brookline and Auditor Diana DeSigolia of Methuen are running unopposed. Things are heating up, not in a good way, by Jan Gottsman, item editor. When I was little, my maternal grandmother, my Bubby, would tell me that I wilt like a flower. I didn't have a lot of tolerance for heat as a child, back in the days when we had to settle for a box fan, popsicles, and iced tea. It has only gotten worse as I have aged, and in the last few years I have noticed I sweat mostly from my head. The straw, wide-brim hat I wear on assignment often sports large sweat stains. I go through a ton of paper towels, blotting my hairline front and back. This year, as the heat seemed to hit me harder than usual, I chose to buy a neck fan, which sort of resembles a pair of nunchucks and blows cool air around my neck and up into my hair. First assignment I took it to was the reading of the Declaration of Independence in West Boylston on July 4th. I thought it sounded like an industrial air conditioner, but my husband assured me I only thought so because it was literally running near my ears. I still rushed to the car and its air conditioning when the outdoor event was over, but I seemed to survive better than usual. Does that work? People were stopping me at events, whether it was Cruz and Clinton, the Clinton townwide yard sale, or Sterling Street Market. I admit, it still takes some getting used to. I cannot turn it on when it is around my neck. I fumble to find the button to start the cooling. I have to figure out how to put the cooling fan and my camera strap around my neck at the same time without one blocking the other. But these are pretty trivial issues. Some would call them first world problems. Needing a device to wear around my neck to cool me down is likely a first world problem on its own. But the number of people posing that one question, does that work, makes it clear that I am not alone. The fact that more women than men ask me the question is also telling to me. So this summer, I've spent much of my time in air conditioning, eating watermelon and Italian ice, and dreading outdoor assignments where temperatures soar and air quality plummets. But as they say, we deal, we make the most of it, and we make it work. Though I honestly cannot remember how we managed back when car windows were manually rolled down, and we used the vent to bring hot air into the car to try to make us feel cooler. I personally long for the springs of my youth, where we didn't immediately go from winter's freeze to summer's inferno. Jan Gottsman is editor of The Item. She can be reached at editorial@clintonitem.com. One Ingredient Treats offers healthy options for dogs, Lancaster. Only three individuals are involved in One Ingredient Treats, but when one of those has four legs, you know the quality control of these pet treats is guaranteed. Ashley Lombard is the main force behind One Ingredient Treats, overseeing every step from production to packaging and sales, with help from her husband and their four-legged friend Baxter, who participates in the sales by bringing people to their booth with his wagging tail and invitation to pet him. And it all started with Baxter. We were struggling to find treats we actually trusted, ones without a long list of things we couldn't pronounce, so we decided to make our own, using just one ingredient at a time, she said. What began as a kitchen experiment turned into something bigger as word spread. One Ingredient Treats was born. At its core, our mission is simple. Pets deserve pure, clean, honest treats made from just one carefully selected ingredient. No sneaky additives, no fillers, nothing with a name longer than your dog's leash, she said. Just real high-quality food you can trust. When it comes to feeding a dog, we believe transparency, quality, and simplicity should always come first. Lombard does no outsourcing, and I don't cut corners. Every treat is made by me in a licensed, FDA-approved, human-grade kitchen, following the same standards used in food production for people, she said. Everything is dehydrated rather than baked or heavily processed, which gently removes moisture at a low temperature and preserves the ingredients without any additives. Chicken still tastes like chicken. Sweet potatoes still looks like sweet potato, just crispier and shelf stable. My treats are also lab tested to confirm they meet safety and moisture standards. Baxter was the first to sample the treats. Once friends and coworkers started seeing how excited Baxter got over his treats, they wanted the same for their own dogs, Lombard said. I realized that other owners were dealing with the exact same frustration we had, wanting something simple and trustworthy to feed their pets without all the extra ingredients you can't even pronounce. That's what pushed me to turn a kitchen project into an actual business, so other pups could enjoy the same clean, honest treats Baxter did. Lombard said response has been overwhelmingly positive, both online and in person. Every single order still gets me excited. That hasn't worn off, she added. Baxter's blend is a fan favorite, a mix of chicken, pork, and sweet potato all in one jar. Customers also love that I offer each ingredient individually, not just in blends. That way, even pups with allergies or sensitives can still enjoy a clean, healthy treat made from the one ingredient that works for them, she said. Lombard sells at local events and craft markets throughout Massachusetts and the Northeast, including Sterling Street Market. I post upcoming events on Instagram and Facebook, so people can check there for where I'll be next, or message me if they'd like to see me at an event near them, she said. Not local? No problem. I ship anywhere in the U.S. Check out their website at oneingredienttreats.org. I'm looking forward to growing the business and continuing to make dogs happy, one ingredient at a time, she added. Neshoba students take part in Week on Beacon Hill by Kristen Dejean, Stowe Independent. Neshoba Regional High School students Lucy Rain and Sydney Lemaire of Stowe spent part of their summer learning how Massachusetts state government works through Rep. Kate Hogan's annual Week on Beacon Hill program. The students were among 8 local residents who spent a week in Hogan State House office, where they observed the legislative process, explored careers in public service, and met with elected officials and government professionals. The program gives high school students an opportunity to experience the Capitol firsthand by attending formal legislative sessions and committee briefings while learning about the roles and responsibilities of legislators, constitutional officers, and advocates and public employees. The program is a wonderful way for younger students to experience the workings of our government, Hogan said. When I meet with them, I often hear how surprised they are by how much work gets done by the legislature, how collegial members of both parties are in dealing with issues of the day, and how you can make a difference for your community and the Commonwealth. All great lessons. During the week, Rain and Lemaire toured the State House, observed legislature proceedings, and gained a better behind-the-scenes look at how state government serves residents across the Commonwealth. Joining the Neshoba students were Hudson High School graduate Julian Elke and Advanced Math and Science Academy students Dominic Rodriguez and Ashke Garlora, both of Hudson, along with Hudson High School students Will Burgess, Nicholas Lane, and Bridget O'Keefe. Hogan said the annual program is designed to introduce students to the legislative process while encouraging civic engagement and highlighting the many career opportunities available in government and public service. By providing direct access to the day-to-day work of the legislature, the program aims to help students better understand how laws are made and how individuals can make a difference in their communities. In Right to Farm Communities, Beware of Four-Legged Pedestrians by Kristen Dujon, Stowe Independent. Two wandering sheep in Bolton surprised motorists Monday morning after escaping from a nearby property along the Bolton-Stowe line. The sheep were spotted around 7:30 a.m. on July 27th near 108 Teal Road by Bolton resident Liz Camilleri, who took a nice photo and said it was a surprise. "They were so big," she explained to the Independent. "I really first thought it was a bear and I was in danger, not expecting to see that come out of the woods." Camilleri posted a photo on the Bolton Community Facebook page. Residents familiar with the area identified the animals as belonging to a nearby farm in Stowe, and they were later returned home. No injuries or traffic incidents were reported. Backroads Livestock Wildlife. While encounters with loose livestock are uncommon, they can occur in communities such as Bolton and Stowe, where farms remain an active part of the landscape. Both towns are designated right-to-farm communities, recognizing agriculture as an important local industry and encouraging residents and visitors to expect normal farming activities. Drivers traveling through rural areas are encouraged to use caution, particularly on winding roads with limited visibility. Livestock can be difficult to see around curves or in wooded areas and may move unpredictably if startled. Motorists who encounter loose farm animals should slow down, avoid sounding the horn or making sudden movements that could frighten the animals, and contact local police or animal control if it's safe to do so. Another concern, which is more frequent, deer in roadways. Deer can dart out quickly and often travel in numbers, so if one crosses, another may be behind it. Going slowly, especially at night, can help. There's other tips to avoid hitting deers at georgiawildlife.com/avoiding-deer-car-collisions. Behind the business, Clinton Savings Bank celebrates 175 years with a continued commitment to Bolton by Kristen Dijon, Stowe Independent. As Clinton Savings Bank celebrates its 175th anniversary this year, bank officials say its commitment to Bolton extends well beyond financial services, with decades of community involvement, charitable giving, and financial education. Founded in 1851, Clinton Savings Bank has marked the milestone with year-long community initiatives, including scholarships, charitable donations, volunteerism, and custom appreciation events throughout central Massachusetts. During the second quarter of 2026 alone, the bank contributed more than $20,000 to local schools, youth sports programs, and community organizations and awarded $1,000 scholarships to graduating seniors at 8 area high schools. The anniversary celebration will continue throughout the third quarter with more than $23,000 in charitable giving, support for local chamber of commerce, small businesses, and community fairs, and its annual back-to-school supply drive. 4 decades in Bolton. We first opened our doors in Bolton in 1981, with our branch located in the office building complex on Main Street, said Mary T. Dean, president and CEO of Clinton Savings Bank. In 2015, we relocated across the street to our current location, 562 Main Street, where we continue to proudly serve the community. Dean said supporting local organizations has remained central to the bank's mission. Giving back has always been an important part of who we are, she said. Over the past 2 years, we have contributed more than $14,000 in monetary donations to Bolton organizations and causes. Clinton Savings Bank employees also regularly take part in community events in Bolton, including the Halloween Walk, Easter Egg Hunt, Bolton Fair, Children's Fair, Career Fair, and Neshoba Regional High School's Reality Fair. The bank also promotes financial literacy through school partnerships. We offer in-school banking programs at several local elementary schools, Dean said. We currently partner with Florence Sawyer Elementary School and are looking forward to resuming the program there this fall so that students can once again benefit from this valuable financial education opportunity. Dean said the bank's 175th anniversary is an opportunity to recognize the communities that have supported it throughout its history. celebrating 175 years isn't just about looking back. It's about recognizing the people who have made this milestone possible, Dean said. Every scholarship we award, every youth team we sponsor, every local event we support, every opportunity we have to bring people together is our way of saying thank you. We are grateful to be in your community and be your community bank, and we look forward to serving this region for generations to come. We're just getting started. Back to School Supply Drive. The bank launched its fourth annual Back to School Supply Drive on July 20th in partnership with local radio station XLO. All community members are invited to donate new school supplies at any Clinton Savings Bank branch to help local students begin the school year with the tools they need to succeed. For a list of requested items and bank locations, see clintonsavings.com. Bolton Fair returns August 14th through the 16th with 3 days of family fun, agriculture, and entertainment. By Kristen Dijon. The Bolton Fair will return August 14th through the 16th for its 143rd year, bringing 3 days of agricultural exhibits, live entertainment, carnival rides, and family activities to the Lancaster Fair grounds. One of New England's longest-running agricultural fairs, the event traces its roots to Bolton before relocating to Lancaster in 2004 to accommodate continued growth. Today, the fair spans 53 acres and attracts visitors from throughout New England while maintaining its focus on agriculture, livestock, and community traditions. Old favorites and new additions. This year's entertainment lineup features returning favorites, including two demolition derbies Saturday and Sunday, monster truck rides, a farm tractor pull, ATV racing and stunts, and acrobatic performance, family-friendly wrestling, and the always popular magic and hypnosis shows by Lance Gifford. There will be a Little Digger exhibit with lots of diggers. There are new music options, including a Friday night concert with country singer sensation Eva Rickey, who is originally from Stowe, and the popular local group Disco Lemonade. There will be some new musicians in the beer garden, as well as some popular performers from the past, and a community drum circle during the Kids Country Show in the pavilion tent, along with juggling and music for kids. Agricultural demonstrations remain in the heart of the fair, with livestock exhibits, blacksmithing, woodworking, farmers market vendors, and educational displays highlighting the region's farming heritage. Families will find a variety of children's attractions, including Kids Country, a petting farm, carnival rides and games, and numerous opportunities to interact with farm animals. The fair will also feature craft vendors, shopping, food concessions, and exhibit hall and showcase, and a beer and wine garden open daily from noon to 7 p.m. Alcoholic beverages must remain within the enclosed garden. The hours are Friday noon to 9 p.m., Saturday 9 to 9, and Sunday 9 to 6. Midway rides begin at noon each of the 3 days. Admission covers all events and activities except rides and food drinks, which are purchased separately. No pets allowed except service animals. The admission is $18, $15 if purchased before August 14th. Seniors 65 plus and military $12. Children ages 5 through 12 $10, and children 4 and under are free. Fair organizers will have an American Sign Language ASL expert on hand on Saturday for any who can benefit from those services. Free parking is available at the designated satellite lot in 1450 Lunenburg Road in Lancaster, across from Kimball Farm. Shuttle buses will transport visitors to and from the fairgrounds throughout the weekend. No public parking is available directly at the fairgrounds. More at boltonfair.org. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Ellen. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have your best day ever.